if we can pull this off, you know, this would be unlike anything out there, anything anybody's heard.
In prison, there's a lot of rules. And I mean, a lot of rules.
I've been obsessed with this podcast.
The beautiful thing about podcasting is there are no rules. There is no clock to follow.
You have to decide how far you want to go, whether you want to have the tape recording with your shrink.
Yeah.
Your spouse.
With your spouse in bed.
We say, like, good for life, bad for the podcast.
I'm Julie Shapiro. I'm the executive producer of Radiotopia, a curated network of creative story-driven podcasts. I've been in the radio business as a professional listener for about 17 years, and today I'm going to give you a masterclass on the art of podcasting.
Hello and welcome to the Masterclass. I'm Louisa Lim and I teach journalism here at the University of Melbourne. Each week we're going to have a Master of Audio Journalism talking through one aspect of the craft. This week we're talking podcasting with Julie Shapiro. She's in charge of Radiotopia, which runs some of the hottest podcasts out there.
Welcome to Radiotopia, a curated network of extraordinary cutting-edge podcasts.
This is 99% Invisible.
Welcome to The Allusionist.
This is Criminal.
You're listening to Song Exploder.
To The West Wing Weekly.
This is The Bugle.
This is The Memory Palace.
Welcome.
Welcome to Strangers.
To The Heart.
You're listening to Millennial.
The Truth.
The Mortified Podcast.
Theory of Everything.
Radio Diaries.
Love and Radio.
The Kitchen Sisters present.
We're glad you found us. Now, grab your headphones, find your next favorite show, and happy listening.
Radiotopia from PRX.
Julie, that's really quite a stable of podcasts. I mean, let's start from the basics. When you decide, you know, which podcasts you're going to kind of adopt into your stable, how do you decide? You know, do you go according to the host or the concept, or what is the kind of magic?
Well, I think now the thing that makes a show a Radiotopia podcast, or the things that make a show a Radiotopia podcast, are a sense of creative production and we say story-driven. They're not all storytelling podcasts, but they're story-infused in all of our shows. These are independent producers who own their own content and have already done the hard work of creating shows, gaining some audience, and getting a reputation out in the world, and they already have listeners. We recognize that they have the potential to be even more successful. So what Radiotopia does is invite them into the network and then kind of build the scaffolding around the content, because making a podcast is a lot more than just the audio content. You have marketing and promotion and the technology and the sponsorship sales, and there's so much more, the visual, the logos, how shows interact with their listeners through social media. All of those things are tied up in being a successful podcast.
So for young students or people who are just thinking about starting a podcast, what do you think are the key ingredients?
An original idea. You have to start with an original, sustainable idea. Not just an idea, but an idea that can play out in lots of different ways. We always ask people with new ideas, well, what's the 100th episode of this, if there would be 100 episodes? Thinking about what format best fits the information or the stories that you want to make. Are they seasonal? Is it a series of stories? Is it ongoing? How much work is involved? What's the sound of these stories being told? A lot of our shows make long-form crafted work, so there's a lot of sound design, and they often have, you know, maybe a couple people working on them, but they're highly motivated, driven, hard workers. And I would say if you're thinking of starting a podcast, the first thing you have to really understand is how much work is involved. What's your idea? How can you tell it originally? And how are you going to have a presence as a host or in the show to make it stand out from the rest of the field?
So, I mean, you're talking about originality, and one of your latest podcasts, Ear Hustle, has been a massive hit. I think it got, 1.5 million listens within a month.
Yeah.
Yet it's set in a medium security prison.
I'm Erlon Woods. I'm incarcerated at San Quentin State Prison in California.
I'm Nigel Poor, a visual artist who volunteers at San Quentin.
And together, we're going to take you inside. In prison, there's a lot of rules. And I mean, a lot of rules.
Yeah, there's rules for you guys inside, but there's also rules for people like me who come in to spend time here. There's a big one around food. I can't share any food with you that I bring in, and I can't eat your food.
Indeed.
And there's other ones, too, like there's only certain colors I can wear. There's only certain parts of the prison I can go to. And in some ways, they're not unlike some of the rules that affect you guys.
I've been obsessed with this podcast. I just find it so fascinating. But, I mean, when they came to you, was it already in this kind of form, or did you have to work hard to make it more relatable? What did you have to do to give it that kind of Radiotopia thing?
Well, this was a really special case because this was a brand new idea. And what happened was we ran a contest in 2016 for new podcast ideas. It was called, very cleverly, PodQuest. And we put the call out and said, we want to bring a new show into the network. We want to diversify. We want to have a new take on something that isn't already represented by the shows in the network. And 1,537 entries came in the door or into the inbox. And Ear Hustle was the winner of this contest. So it's produced by a visual artist, Nigel Poor, who's been volunteering at San Quentin and working with these guys, Antoine Williams and Erlon Woods. Nigel and Erlon are the co-hosts. And they brought this idea and said, we want to tell long-form artistic stories of life behind prison, just daily life, what it's like to live in a prison. I mean, this idea already like jumped off the page. Their submission reel was really compelling, the voices themselves. And we thought, if we can pull this off, you know, this would be unlike anything out there, anything anybody's heard. Now, how to make it was a whole other story because they are in a medium security prison. There's no internet. You can't have phones in there. I mean, all of the tools of the trade that are now very standard for podcast producers are not allowed in, you know, in the space. On the other hand, it's produced out of San Quentin State Prison in California, and there is a very progressive sense of the power of rehabilitation. And so there was already a media lab set up. So they had some equipment, enough to put together a reel. And so we thought, well, if the prison is behind the idea, which they allowed them to enter the contest, we would go for it. And so we started from scratch. They weren't really seasoned journalists or producers. In fact, Antoine has a funny joke where he says, we're not journalists, we're journeyists. You know, this is about life and our sort of journeys through life. So we have been involved in helping shape the overall shape of season one. There were 10 episodes in season one. We brought on a story editor to help actually literally with some of the edits. So Nigel and Erlon and Antoine would work very hard on a take or a draft, and then Nigel would bring it out at night, and she'd talk to Curtis about it. He'd give some suggestions, and then she'd take it back in the next day. This is glacial for production compared to today's standards. But, you know, another thing that we laugh about is, I mean, they have an advantage because all of their interviewees are right in, you know, in the yard and around them. But on the other hand, Nigel can't stay there past a certain time. So all those all-nighters you pull editing to, you know, hit your deadlines, she just can't count on any of that. And everything that comes out of the prison has to be approved by their public information officer. And so it's a really slow process. There's a lot of hurdles to the production, the actual production.
I mean, I think the thing that's so surprising about it is how relatable it is. You know, you would think that what happens in a medium security prison is so far removed from our lives. But then in some episodes, it really makes you think again about the world you inhabit. And I think my favorite example was the episode about race.
Prison politics are complicated, even for guys who aren't mixed race, who are totally clear about which group they're in.
Wayne Boatwright was in his 50s when he got to San Quentin. One of the first things he learned about was the racial geography of the prison yard.
The yards are divided into sections of control by each of the races. But I unfortunately, am somewhat oblivious to some of these standards. So one time, for example, I was walking across the prison yard and just wandered into the Latin area, and a young man came up to me and said, excuse me, sir, you know, you're white, you're not allowed to be in here. And I just said, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to, and walked out.
Erlon, for people with no experience of prison, this racial landscape it's weird, it's confusing.
It's the same racial landscape that's on our side, though.
I understand what you're saying, but it's not so clearly delineated outside, and it's not such a tight space. I mean, the yard here at San Quentin is not that big, and to have it divided up into these various turfs, it's really striking.
It's the same thing. It's just on a smaller scale.
So I couldn't stop thinking about that. I just thought it was so fascinating. And then it made me start thinking about you know, in the structure of the podcast, do you have to have this big aha moment in every episode? Mm. I mean, we see the epiphany in almost every story in This American Life. It's almost become a bit of a cliche. Is it a requirement, do you think?
We don't think about that traditional storytelling, you know, where's the arc, where's the resolution, where's the change in the character? Because a lot of these stories are really about the smaller moments, the day-to-day life, what it's like behind bars. And one of the goals of the show is, as you've picked up on, to say, what's really different between living on the inside and the outside? And how can you collaborate between the inside and the outside? And a man and a woman, and she's white, and Erlan's black. And, you know, there's all of these ways we're saying this can work. And these stories are really just letting these men be humans living in a certain situation. And they're telling their stories of just the mundane and the profound. And I think the epiphanies that people get are these moments where they understand that they care about somebody that they might not have thought twice about. And that gets them thinking about the system that has put them there. It's not an overtly political podcast, but there's a lot of takeaway that gets people actually thinking about how they live in the world and what they presume about certain populations. And so that is happening without, I think, there being like an A, B, C, D structure or, you know, the kind of typical shape of a story that you'd find. And we're trying to always shake it up, too. So we have, you know, Vox Pop out in the yard, and then we have one episode that's one person's story long, like throughout the whole episode, and sometimes it's three or four different stories combined. So we're still working it out. I think we find the topic that works and the guys that have the best stories and have a desire to share their stories, and then we kind of take it from there.
But that whole making people care ethos, it seems that's really at the heart of a lot of your podcasts. Now, thinking about Millennial by Megan Tan.
Yeah.
Because perhaps caring about millennials, you know, is something that people who are not millennials might find it in a way harder to do. It seems that, you know, if you're older, you know, you always see the complaints, millennials have it so easy. But I think her podcast is so interesting because she's really, really showing the world through somebody else's eyes, isn't she?
You're listening to Millennial, a podcast series that documents something that no one teaches you, how to maneuver your 20s, a period that everyone goes through and that 80 million people find themselves in right now. Each episode will be documenting what it's like to be one of those millennials.
Yeah, I think that's always the strength of the audio medium, which is you get to walk in other people's shoes. You're right with them in their experiences. And Megan has such a skill for explaining where she's at and expressing things. And in the first season, which was really about her struggle to decide what she wanted to do with her life, like the absolute epitome of the millennial question, right, or the millennial existence, you know, she really opened up to the microphone, to her audience, and listeners got close, and then they started caring. And whether you were a millennial or not, I think you started caring about her decisions and where she was going to end up. When we invited her into the network, and she made a really fun and gorgeous episode about being invited in.
It is my honor to announce that Millennial is a proud, proud member of
Radiotopia.
I would see the response we'd get through social media. People were like, I was crying at the end when you announced that Radiotopia invited you. They were so happy for her. They were joyful in a way that, you know, you might not expect from strangers.
There is this real tension in doing a podcast that's so personal. And she addresses that head on, I think, in some episodes.
Millennial will never be season one. I just don't think that that can happen. And I also don't think that it's sustainable for me personally to make an episode every other week about my life that is as emotional and interesting as the episodes in season one. Do you think that that's a bad thing?
I think it's an unavoidable thing. Unless you want to throw your life into chaos.
No.
That's the nature of it. Like, the harder that you work to get your life in a place that makes you happy, the less inherent conflict beyond just like the conflict that we all live with.
Yeah. We used to say, you know, when I got rejected from NPR, we used to say like, bad for life, good for the podcast, you know?
Right?
And now we say like, when Thanksgiving went really smoothly, we say like, good for life, bad for the podcast. Like,
yeah.
So what are the lessons for if someone wanted to make a personal podcast? What are the lessons that you would give them that you could sort of take away from the experience of Megan Tan's experience of making Millennial, which was so personal?
I would say tread lightly. I mean, it's a really big commitment to say you're going to do an ongoing story about your life, and the comfort you have with it when you start might not be what you feel 10 episodes in, or do a shorter form. I mean, there's nothing that says any podcast has to go on forever. So if somebody had their own personal story they really wanted to tell, great, craft it into 5 or 6 episodes, divide that up, and, you know, whether it's ongoing or not, kind of find a manageable way. I would start small, see how it feels, and then really think about what is it about a personal story that can relate beyond your friends and family and your sort of closest people, and how do you tell that story? I think some of the most successful podcasts have very personable hosts, and people become loyal friends and fans, and they keep listening because they want that person's take on what they're going to hear. So it's important to be personal and personable. But I think there's a fine line between, you know, taxing yourself with something that may ultimately not be sustainable.
You have to decide how far you want to go, whether you want to have the tape recording with your shrink.
Yeah.
With
your spouse in bed. I mean, there are some personal, you know, intimate moments that Megan shares, whether she's brushing her teeth or, you know, smooching her fella before they turn out the light and go to sleep. I mean, it stays family friendly, but, you know, she had a recorder with her a lot. I would also say the most important thing about starting a personal podcast that I would ask someone is why. Like, what is the point of this one? What is it offering? What's it for? And really have that sort of worked out for yourself before you dive in.
So, I mean, how far do you think people should be thinking ahead? I went to a podcast talk where the trainer said, you've got to have 7 episodes planned out because most podcasts don't make it beyond the 7th episode. But to me, that kind of sets quite a high bar for someone who's just kind of playing with the format and having a go. I don't know whether I agree with that. So I'd be really curious to see what your thoughts are.
You know, they've probably shifted in the past 6 to 12 months because we're really seeing more shows that are just short form. They're just not ongoing. So if you've got an idea you want to explore in lots of ways, you can figure out, you know, I've got a dozen ideas. These are the 4 I'm going to start with. They're more crystallized. I know I have a better sense of how that will work. These other ones are sort of on the whiteboard, and we'll see what works out. I mean, in storytelling, you always have to have many more stories that you think about telling compared to what you actually end up telling, because stories get killed and don't work out all the time. So you've got to have a lot of ideas generated. I wouldn't say you had to have a certain number of episodes mapped out, but I would say you should produce a few in advance of actually ever starting your podcast, so you're never episode to episode. That is really draining, and I think that's one of the hardest things for producers who are, you know, it's kind of this similar paycheck to paycheck existence. When you drop an episode and you're immediately diving into the next one, that's hard. And it's hard for your creative health to continue, you know, pushing yourself to find new ways to at least keep up the standards that you have on your show. So I think, you know, you have to have a few ideas if you intend to have an ongoing show. But it depends on what the ambition is, what it's for, you know, what is your pace. If you are going to make 1 episode a month, you can afford to develop those ideas more slowly. If you want to, you know, jump out of the gate with a weekly podcast, I'm not actually recommending that. I think you have to be a little more prepared. And it also depends on what kind of show you're making, like how much production is actually going into it. Is it a chat cast where you sit around a studio and talk, you know, like we are right now? Mm-hmm. A lot of podcasts are just conversations between people. I also don't recommend that unless you've got really interesting people talking about really interesting things and a good editor, because those ones go on for way too long, most of all. But they're less work. So you could sort of be more ambitious about the number of episodes you want to get through. And, you know, it just really depends on what the kernel of the idea is that you're trying to go for.
Yeah, let's talk about length, because I did see some NPR stats where they said 26 to 40 minutes, I think it was.
That's the sweet spot?
I think they said that's the sweet spot. I've always thought 25 minutes is about right. But I mean, I'm curious, because I know that some of the ear hustles are quite long. I never get bored.
Yeah, our shows kind of vary. Some of them are in the 50 to 60 minutes and they're one story. I'd say most of them, like, are in the between 22 and 30 minute mark. I'm really comfortable with 22 to 26. That's my sweet spot. But I have to listen to a whole lot, so I don't have the patience for the unedited conversations that go on forever. I also think stories should take as long as they need to take. But there's a skill in understanding how long they don't need to take, and they're often longer than they need to be. So you want to give a story space to breathe, but also not space to run over its, you know, natural limits of what it actually needs to be told. It's different strokes. I mean, there's also been studies that have come out that people love the 90-minute history podcasts. And it just, for listeners, it really depends on what their lifestyle is, what they have time for. it's a space-time continuum issue. You know, there are just only so many minutes in the day. We used to run a contest at the Third Coast Festival where I worked for a long time and helped co-found, where we gave people a challenge to make three-minute stories. And we had some absolute masterpieces come out of that contest that were 3 minutes long. You can do so much in 3 minutes. You can do an awful lot in 25. You can do too much in an hour. I think there's also a desire to mimic a radio clock, which is just absurd. The beautiful thing about podcasting is there are no rules. There is no clock to follow.
I feel like our clock is ticking. I think we've been talking for 20 minutes. I mean, let's talk quickly about 99% Invisible, because that's a really long-running show, isn't it? It's had 150 million downloads.
We've all done it. You go to the store for a pair of socks and come out with a mega pack of soda. You go out to get shampoo and come back with a fancy razor. It's hard to stick to what's on your list. I challenge you to go to IKEA and leave with only the thing for which you came. Just try to buy a lamp without buying a cutting board. It can't be done.
You absolutely knew this, but retail spaces are designed to do this to you.
Producer Avery Truffleman.
The store is trying to look so beautiful, so welcoming, the items so enticingly displayed in such vast quantity that you cannot help but be drawn in and then drawn towards something you don't need.
This is the Gruen effect.
That's just one example of their work. What is the secret to their success? Because when you have such a long-running podcast, you know, there is a kind of formula, but then you need to keep your audience, keep them on their toes, keep them interested. Have they managed to do that?
Oh, so 99% Visible was started by Roman Mars, who's also a partner in Radiotopia with PRX. And he started it on his own. I can't remember exactly when, but it was years ago. And he slowly, you know, what he hit on was this topic that was so broad and yet so definable. It was a perfect thing. It was, you know, small stories, small and big, about design in the world, our built environment, how we live, what we notice, what we live with. He slowly started building the show, started bringing some staff on board. And this is how it works. You work hard on your own for no money for a certain amount of time, and then you get some recognition and the audience comes and the money starts coming through sponsorships or through, you know, he famously did a Kickstarter. He asked his listeners to help support his efforts. And then at some point they went bold and they said, let's take this weekly. And that's what it takes to be one of the biggest shows out there. In his case, it's still highly produced and crafted and careful storytelling. He has fun with it, too. It's a joyful show. It surprises. It delights. It has a lot of different emotional tones. It doesn't always do the same thing, but you kind of always know you're going to hear something about design. Some of the stories are a little more political, even. Some of the stories are more documentary. Occasionally, he'll throw an interview in to give everyone a week off or if a story falls through, you know, and that he has the flexibility to do that because his listeners, what I was saying earlier, basically trust him so much and revere his every decision and every episode enough that they just go along with the ride and they find some value in something that he feels enough value in presenting to them.
I mean, it's interesting that you keep talking about listeners, and I think that's one of the key things, isn't it? The relationship between the host and their audience. And I've been noticing that there seems to be much more of a feedback loop with audiences becoming part of podcasts in various ways, even in Ear Hustle, sending letters and getting answers.
All right, Naj, let's dig into the questions.
All right, so the first question is from Lucy in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And she writes, walking into a cafeteria as a new kid at school is awkward because you never know where to sit. It must be worse in prison. So what do you do on your first day? Where do you sit?
Well, to answer this question, it's simple. You have two rules, official and unofficial. Meaning official is you can sit wherever you want to sit, or there's a controlled feeding, meaning an officer is directing you to the next available seat. So it'll be in a row. You would just fill up this one table, then you fill up the next table, then so on and so on.
So how do you decide what role your listeners should play, and how do you decide at what point you kind of start including them?
Well, I think I can speak to Ear Hustle specifically, because what we didn't understand about the listeners was actually that we would have equal interest from opposite audiences. So Ear Hustle is now turned to by people with families in prison and relationships with prisoners, people who've worked in prisons. We've heard from victims who listen to the show and gain a different understanding of the criminal justice system and the men behind bars. So there's a whole swath of it, lots of listeners who are connected in some way. And then there's this whole entire community of people who have no connection and are so curious. And the letters thing has been remarkable. So we put a call out for postcards for people to send their questions about life in prison that they had, that they wanted the show to think about answering, and we have gotten like almost 1,000 postcards so far. And so we're going to do an episode every season where we just answer questions, because that, you know, they're speaking for every question that comes in, probably X number of people are also wondering that. And so for us, it was a very natural progression to say, who's listening? What do they care about? How can we address some of those questions? It's been, I think, so rewarding for Nigel and Erlan and Antoine as well to see this engagement. So if you're a podcaster slaving away, like getting response from your listeners is just like a drug, right? Give me more, give me more. And you want to know someone's out there listening and that they care and that they're having, that your podcast is doing something for them.
Well, what are your predictions for the next couple of years? How is the podcast market changing? What should people wanting to get into it, what should they be thinking about?
It is changing so quickly. And in the industry, there's just a lot of money coming through the podcast system. And that can be really daunting for people getting started, saying, how do I even get a leg up? You know, even if I don't want to make a lot of money, how do I make a show that is popular? Because all the popular shows have a lot of money behind them. And the thing with podcasting is anyone can do it. And, you know, we have niche podcasts for small audiences. These shows that are the biggest and most popular making the lists, you know, these are sort of slightly more professional, moneyed, resourced operations mostly. But so there's a lot more money pumping through the system. There's a lot of celebrities coming into podcasting. There's a lot of people from other artistic mediums coming in, seeing the potential for telling stories through audio. I think we'll see more scripted fiction. I think we'll see more limited series instead of ongoing shows because of all the reasons I've talked about, it being so very hard to keep a show going over time. I think we'll see more diverse voices and people from the margins stepping up with their own shows. There's a lot of open space for that. And the more out there, the more you hear yourself represented in what you're listening to, the more encouraged you are to give it a go yourself. And that's a really crucial, important thing that has to happen and continue to happen. I think it's improved greatly. There are a ton more people of color on the mic. There's a lot more women involved in the game than there were, you know, 5 years ago. And it's changing quickly. So those are really positive improvements. I think it's getting more competitive, on the other hand. And there's like a real Hollywood seems very rabid and knocking on all the doors. You know, podcast is quote unquote mainstream in the U.S. now. There's enough people listening to it that, they, you know, it's been decided by the people who do these studies that it's, you know, a pretty mainstream, mass popular appeal sort of activity. So with that is just going to come, you know, a lot more content. There's just so much out there. There's a lot of repetitive content and, you know, so that's going to continue. I think there's more kids podcasts coming down the pike. I guess that those are my main predictions.
So can you give me two top tips for anyone wanting to get into podcasting? If someone wants to do a successful podcast, what are the two most important things for them to think about?
You have to love an idea and a topic so much that you want to live, breathe, eat, marry it. So, you know, passion drives a lot of these producers. So I say you have to really pick something that you really care about. So that would be number one. Number two would be listen to a lot of other podcasts. You learn so much by listening. And listen beyond thinking you like or don't like something. Pick it apart. Get critical. Try to understand what works for you and what doesn't. And the third, I'm going to say three. The third thing I would say is join a community. Partner up. Don't do it by yourself. It's too much work. You always need a sounding board, an editor, someone to hear what you've done and give you feedback. So you can't, I would never try to do it alone. I think that's the like first step towards disaster in trying to do a podcast. There's so much work involved. But yeah, I think I would say love the idea you have, listen to others, and then partner up.
And finally, I think, do you have a task for our listeners?
I do have a task. I think that a lot of podcasting these days is about news and information. And I think the form, the beauty, the art of podcasting gets sometimes takes a backseat to those really information-filled talky chatcasts and sometimes for good reason. It's important information. But my task for you is to find a storytelling podcast in Radiotopia. Why not? And I want you to listen carefully to what the sound cues are, whether it's scoring, whether it's scenes, and write out a kind of a map almost of, as you listen, where the sound comes in and what effect it has. And you can judge it. Does it work for you? Does it not? Is it too heavy-handed? Is the music too much or too little? But listen with a real consciousness towards the sound design and what the sound is bringing to the storytelling, because that is such a great asset that's underused often. And, you know, I'm just a big proponent of how sound can help tell the story and give an experience when listeners hear it beyond just the narration and the information they're getting through voice.
Perfect. Thank you so much,
My
Judy.
My pleasure.
The Masterclass is produced and edited by Louisa Lim, Buffy Guerrilla, and Ruby Schwartz. It's recorded by Gavin Naber at the Horwood Recording Studio. The original concept is by Anders Furs. The music is by Susie Wilkins. It's all brought to you by the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne. Thanks for listening.